So this Sunday and next Sunday will be the last two sermons in the Wokeism series, Lord willing. Today I want to finish up on gender ideology, and then next week I want to look at DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion, and ESG, which is environmental, social, and corporate governance. So we'll be switching gears next week. Before I get into what I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to jump back and just make reference to something that I had talked about, I think it was last Sunday, when I was referring to the medical establishment and their part in this nefarious gender ideology being pushed on children. I happened to be reading in the book of Job, in my just my daily Bible reading this week, and I lighted on a verse that I had noticed before. I'd even made a note next to it, which says the AMA. Job was speaking to his friends here, and you should put friends in air quotes if you've read the book of Job, and you know what those guys said about him and to him. But anyway, he was quite unhappy with how they were blaming him for everything. And he said here, which something that really reminded me of the AMA and reminds me of all of these doctors and therapists and people that follow the AMA's advice and that promote this toxic transgender garbage to children. Job said, "Ye are forgers of lies. Ye are all physicians of no value." That's Job 13:4. That's precisely, describes the AMA precisely, forgers of lies and physicians of no value. Anybody that would recommend affirming a child in his transgender dysphoria and then recommend doing things to encourage that child to transition is certainly a physician of no value and a forger of a lie. So I just thought that was interesting. I added it into the outline in the previous section, but of course, since I won't be preaching that section, I wanted to mention that now. But it's not only the medical establishment that's responsible for this transgender mania. It's not only smartphones or social media. It's not only peer pressure. It's also the schools. They are a big player in this transgender stuff, in this gender ideology. They are pushing for it and facilitating it. And I will prove that beyond a reasonable doubt with some quotes here that I have, mainly from Abigail Schreier's book, Irreversible Damage. And I have another one here from another place that I'll give you here in a minute. Now, I'm going to say something, and it'll probably offend some people. I don't know if anybody in this room possibly, but it definitely offends some people. But I believe it's the truth, and that is that public schools are public cesspools. They've been that way for a long, long time. When I was in school, they were certainly that way, and they've only gotten a lot worse since I was in school. I'm sure I would be shocked if I could walk into one and see the kind of stuff that's going on there and the things that are being taught. I mean, I know some of what's happening. I've heard about it and I've read about it, but I'm sure it would be shocking. But these places are, yeah, they're a den of vipers, honestly. Not to say that there aren't some decent people in there. Of course, there's decent people anywhere, but the institution is a cesspool. And I'll prove that to you here in the next, you know, few minutes as I give you some quotes here. Nowadays, a kindergartner who knows that what Jesus said in Matthew in Mark 10:6, that God made them male and female, a kindergartner that knows that God made them male and female has more understanding than his blockheaded teachers do. Let's look at Psalm 119 and verse 99. I mean, there are plenty of kindergartners out there, and I'm not exaggerating when I say kindergartners. I will read you what is going on in kindergartens across this country. There are plenty of kindergartners out there that have grown up in a Christian home and learned the Bible that are far wiser than their adult teachers, because their adult teachers don't even understand that God made them male and female. Their adult teachers don't even know that there are only two genders and that it's determined by your biology. It's determined by God when you're conceived. They don't even know this. They're a bunch of fools. Psalm 119 and verse 99. The psalmist says, "I have more understanding than all my teachers, for thy testimonies are my meditation." Now, you don't even really need to meditate on Scripture a whole lot to have more understanding than your teachers if you're in a public school these days. I mean, just read the verse. No meditation required. God made them male and female. That's pretty simple. Not to mention, your own two eyes would tell you that, right? You pretty much figure it out, but not these teachers. I think it's interesting that God's message to Israel of old applies to public school children today. Now, of course, I'm taking this verse out of context. I freely admit that, but I think you'll get the point. Isaiah 43 and verse 27, he says, "Thy first father hath sinned." He's talking to Israel. "And thy teachers have transgressed against me." Yes, I could say that to most publicly schooled children today. Or God could say this, "Thy teachers have transgressed against me." They teach these kids evolution. They teach them gender identity. They teach them to be tolerant of sodomy and all kinds of wicked sin. They teach them that abortion is you know, a right for women and it's a good thing. They teach them all kinds of evil that is against the Lord. They've transgressed against God. And any teacher that does this, that teaches or promotes transgenderism or some of the other things I just mentioned, as I mentioned last Sunday, has a sore judgment awaiting him or her. Matthew 18 and verse 6. See, the government figured this out a long time ago. Take over the schools, establish your own schools, and then make those schools funded by taxpayers so everybody has to pay for them, whether you send your kid to them or not. And then if you want to send your child to another institution of your choosing, you still have to pay for the public cesspool, and then you have to pay for the private schooling. So they have it set up where it's really hard to use alternative methods of education. Of course, there's homeschooling, and that's my preference, but that's also not exactly easy. I mean, that's a lot of work, right, to homeschool your own children. So the government really has it set up so that they have either send them here or pay a fortune to send them somewhere else or devote the next 13 years of your life to basically being a full-time teacher yourself, which is not a bad thing. But, you know, the choices are, hey, take this easy route or else we're going to impoverish you or, you know, put a big burden on your shoulders. There's your three choices, basically. So they have it figured out. And then, of course, when they fund the schools, then they determine the curriculum, and then they push their agendas, socialism and wokeism and transgenderism and whatever else. They push all these agendas onto the kids to make sure that they grow up the way that they want them to. See, they figured out that the time to deceive people is when they are very young and impressionable. So get them young. Get them out of the house. And 5 years old is too old. Get them out of the house. Get them in preschool. Get them in whatever is before preschool. Get them out of the house as soon as possible. Get them into that daycare. Get them away from the parents. That's been the plan for a long time. Matthew 18 and verse 6, but whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. That's the judgment awaiting these teachers that are teaching this stuff. Now you might think, oh, it's only happening on the West Coast and on the East Coast. It's only happening in California, New York, New Jersey, and places like that. And it's worse there, no doubt. But it's not only happening in those ultra-liberal places because there are ultra-liberal people that live there and the teachers are ultra-liberal because they live there. It's happening from the top down. It is coming down from the top. This is not something that is just happening in areas, you know, spontaneously because there's stupid people that live there. No, it's coming from the top down, and those places are the ones that are fully implementing the suggestions that are coming from the top. That's what I'm seeing here. Because it's coming from the National Education Association, the NEA, which is the largest teachers union in the country. Now, I don't know if the teachers here in Excelsior are part of the NEA or not. I'm guessing they probably are. I don't know that for a fact. So maybe this stuff is not being pushed down to them from the NEA. I'd be surprised if something similar to it is not being pushed down to them from whoever their higher-ups are. But anyway, the NEA, the big one, this is a desperately wicked organization. They recently, quote, recommended that teachers include the controversial book Gender Queer, that was the title of the book, on their summer reading lists. This is from an article in the New York Post that I read. So the NEA, and this was just last year, 2023, so last summer, the NEA recommended to all their teachers, right? You're talking, I don't know how many, hundreds of thousands of teachers probably, to all their teachers, recommend Gender Queer to your students to read over the summer. You know, just some good quality reading material here. This is what's happening, coming from the top down, like I said. Chances are that your children's teachers are receiving these memos. I don't know that for certain, but chances are they're probably receiving something like that. Hopefully they're not going along with it. But don't bet that that's going to last forever. Here's a quote from Abigail Schreier in her book Irreversible Damage. And she's quoting the NEA here in the beginning of this quote. She says, the consequences, or they say, so the NEA says, the consequences of not affirming a child's gender identity can be severe. And it can interfere with their ability to develop and maintain healthy interpersonal relationships, the National Education Association, NEA, warns. Now, before I get into to comment on what they said, I want to draw your attention to something I did the other day. Remember I said about how knuckleheads use they and them and their to refer to individuals in writing, right? Did you notice it? You probably read it over. You might not have even noticed it. Not affirming a child's gender identity, talking about a single child here, a child's, right, can interfere with their ability. You see that? I'm telling you, you'll see it everywhere. I'm reading Elements of Style. It's an old book. It's a little wee book, but it's pointers on good writing, written a long time ago, like about 100 years ago, I think, was the first edition was written. And it's been updated a little bit since then. But anyway, even in that book, and I don't know if this was in the original 100 years ago or if this was added, you know, at some point later, but even in that book, he says in there, do not use them and they to refer to an individual. It should be he, you know, typically it's he. And he said the same thing I said, and this is before I read what he said, that people do this them and they thing because they're uncomfortable using he to refer to people generically, whether male or female, and to say he slash her or he or she in a sentence is kind of clunky, so they just, you know, people use they and them to refer to individuals. And he says, don't do that. So even in this book, obviously, you know, this has been going on for a long time. People have been falling into this grammatical laziness, is what I would call it. Anyway, so let's get back to what the quote actually said. The consequences of not affirming a child's gender identity can be severe, says the NEA, and it can interfere with their ability to develop and maintain healthy interpersonal relationships. So it is the opinion of this wicked organization that if you don't affirm your child's gender identity, if you have a little boy and thinks he's a girl or a little girl thinks he's a boy and you don't affirm that, then the consequences of that can be severe for this child, severe, and he might not be able to develop healthy interpersonal relationships, right? That, and if you really want to mess up his interpersonal relationships, homeschool him. I mean, the poor kid won't even know how to talk to a single soul for the rest of his life. He'll never be able to hold a conversation with anybody in his entire life because he didn't go to school to be surrounded by his peers, you know, for all that time. Of course, I speak tongue-in-cheek. If you've ever met homeschooled children, you know that they are more social than their counterparts in many cases. That's one of the big myths about homeschooling. I quote again here from Irreversible Damage. This is also the NEA. So she's quoting the NEA again. So here's what the NEA said. Not having their gender identity respected and affirmed in their daily lives will likely cause trans-identified students significant psychological distress, according to the NEA. Yep. If their identity is not respected and affirmed, you're talking, they're going to have psychological problems. the reason why they have this kooky gender identity idea is because they have psychological problems. You're not going to cause them psychological problems by not affirming them. They have psychological problems already, and if you affirm them in their psychological problems, you are going to exacerbate their psychological problems. That's, of course, the truth. Here's another quote from Abigail Schreier's book. She says, in June 2019, listen to this. This ought to raise the hair on the back of your neck. In June 2019, the policymaking arm of the California Teachers Association, CTA, met in Los Angeles at the Westin Bonaventure Hotel. On the agenda for the public school teachers union quarterly meetings were a number of routine items. The recent election of new officers, the union's continuing efforts to monitor new charter school activity. Of course, I'm sure that's big time on their agenda, wanting to make sure to squash the competition. They don't like charter schools or any other kind of schools for that matter. But that's getting off on a rabbit trail. Let me continue here in the quote. And the delegates voted on new business item number 6/19-12, requiring, quote, immediate action, unquote. This was a proposal to allow trans-identified minor students to leave campus during school hours to obtain gender hormone treatments without parental permission. In California, and I'll cut to the chase here, I'll read it to you, but they passed the bill. They passed the measure. So in California, since 2019, this is 5 years ago, this is beyond belief. Students, children, minors can leave school and go get gender hormones, gender replacement hormones, without parental permission or knowledge. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if you had a little girl and, you know, she's acting a little weird maybe, and her voice is just seems like it's getting very deep, and she just starts to, you know, she's growing a mustache, and you're like, what is going on here? And you find out she's been getting hormone therapy when she was at school and you knew nothing about it. I mean, can you imagine that? But that's is what's going on in California. I mean, I would say to anybody that lives in California, if you possibly can, get out, especially if you have children, get out. That place is a loony bin, and that, I mean, that's to put it lightly. That place is Sodom and Gomorrah. That place is desperately evil. I mean, at least the people that run it are. The government is. I'm not talking about the geographical area or even the people that live there necessarily, but the people that run it are lunatics. Anyway, the rationale for the new policy was simple. California state law already allowed cis minors, remember cis means normal, right? They already allowed cis minors, little normal children, to leave school to, quote, receive hormones, that is, birth control, without the barrier of parental permission. This is the problem when you let the camel's nose under the tent. They already were allowed to send children out of school to get birth control without the parents finding out about it. The parents put up with that, and the next thing, you know, little Susie comes home with a beard. Right? Crazy. Trans kids should also be entitled to leave school to obtain their hormones. The delegates voted, and the new item was approved. The CTA would begin to pursue a policy of allowing students age 12 and up to walk out of school during the school day, to walk out the door during the school day to obtain cross-sex hormones. 12 years old. Kids might not even be, haven't even hit puberty yet. And then go get puberty blockers, and then go get testosterone or estrogen or whatever. It's madness. These people ought to be locked up. As if that weren't enough, in January 2020, the CTA's Civil Rights and Education Subcommittee kicked things up a notch. The committee moved to create, quote, school-based health care clinics, unquote, that would provide, quote, cisgender, transgender, and non-binary youth equal and confidential access to a broad range of physical, mental, and behavioral services. Additional votes are needed before this policy can go into effect. But with any luck, in short order, California's minor students who want cross-sex hormones will not only be able to obtain them without parents' knowledge or permission, they may be able to do so without leaving school grounds. Unbelievable. Yeah, I know that's California, but think about all the insane things that California's done over the last, I don't know, 50, 60, 70 years, and think about how much of it has filtered down into the rest of the culture. Think, I mean, you know, it used to be, if you were a sodomite, you were in the closet, unless you moved to California, and then you could be open about it. Well, now you can be open about it everywhere. In Missouri, in small towns, it doesn't matter. Right? These things, you know, it used to be, maybe that was Nevada. You couldn't hardly get a divorce anywhere, but you could go to Nevada, you could go to Reno, and get yourself a divorce. And that was a novel idea. Right? Well, guess what? What happened in Nevada is now everywhere. Right, so whatever happens in one place, a lot of times, just ends up carrying over to the rest of us. Here's another quote from Irreversible Damage. California boasts the most comprehensive statewide gender identity and sexual orientation instruction, statutorily mandatory for all students enrolled in grades K through 12 and explicitly barring parental opt-out. A clever ledger domain, if that's how you pronounce that word, enabled this feat. California law explicitly allows parental opt-out for sexual health education, which I was very surprised to hear that. But the California legislature exempted all materials related to, quote, gender identity, gender expression, and sexual orientation, unquote, from that opt-out. Such instruction, educators contend, is essential to prevent discrimination, harassment, and bullying. In order to protect gay and trans kids from harassment, in other words, it was necessary for all children to receive gender identity and sexual orientation instruction. So the parents can't opt out of it. It doesn't matter if the parents say, I don't want my children taught that. Tough. We're going to teach it to them anyway. There is no opt out. But there is an opt out. Pull your kids out of the schools. That's the ultimate opt-out. And people are doing that. The one good thing that came about of the COVID scamdemic, the one good thing, or maybe there's more, but one good thing I could think about it is homeschooling has almost doubled since then. I just read a stat on that the other day. Almost doubled. That's a good thing. But I can't think of too many other good things that came about of it. Here's another quote, page 60. Educators, activists, and legislators are studying California's blueprints. New York, New Jersey, Colorado, Illinois, Northern Virginia, and Oregon public schools have already adopted a radical approach to gender in their curricula and policies. They're surrounding us. Illinois is 3 hours away. Colorado's what? I don't know where the border is, probably, what, 6 or so hours away or something, right? It's coming. It's closing in, right? It's coming in from the left coast, and it's working its way in. Let's talk about what's going on in elementary schools across the nation. Here's a quote from Irreversible Damage again. She writes, "This is how gender ideology is taught in schools. With the materials, curricula, speakers, and teacher training supplied by gender activists. Kindergartners are introduced to the, quote, genderbread person, unquote, and gender unicorn, unquote. Kindergarten teachers read from I Am Jazz, and the little ones are taught that they might have, quote, a girl brain in a boy body or vice versa. Kindergartners, little five-year-olds, taught from a book that they might have a girl brain and a boy body or a boy brain and a girl body. Taught about gender-bred people. Another quote, the California Board of Education provides through its virtual libraries a book intended for kindergarten teachers to teach their students. The title of the book is Who Are You? The Kid's Guide to Gender Identity by Brooke Pessin Wedby. The author begins with a familiar origin story, quote, babies can't talk, so grown-ups make a guess by looking at their bodies. This is the sex assigned to you at birth, male or female. Babies can't, they're telling this to five-year-olds, babies can't talk, so grown-ups take a look and they just take a guess based on what the baby's body looks like, whether he's a boy or a girl. That, you know, that's how you became a boy or a girl, until you determine otherwise. Right? You were born, your parents or the doctor took a look at you and said, wow, well that little guy's got a penis. I'm just going to go out on a limb here. I'm just going to kind of, you know, just take a shot in the dark and say, probably a boy. I know I have a 50-50 chance of being right here. That's probably a boy. But you can't really know he's a boy until he grows up, until he gets at least, you know, 4 or 5 years old and decides whether he's a boy or a girl. So we're just kind of, you know, we're just taking a swag at it here until the children can tell us what they are. This is the kind of garbage that's being taught to kindergartners. And see, five-year-olds pretty much believe anything you tell them. You know that, right? Five-year-olds believe everything you tell them. So they would believe this, obviously, because they believe everything. This author runs the gamut of typical kindergarten gender identity instruction. Who are you? That's the title of the book. Who are you? Offers kids a smorgasbord of gender options. Quote, these are just a few words people use. This is from the book, read to kindergartners. These are just a few options people use. Trans, genderqueer, non-binary, gender fluid, transgender, gender neutral, agender, neutrois, which is a French word, I think that's how you pronounce it, bigender, third gender, two-spirit. That what I just read you there, that is out of that book, taught to five-year-olds in kindergarten, in public schools. Can you imagine if your child was taught that kind of garbage in kindergarten? The way baby boomers once learned to rattle off state capitals, elementary school kids are now taught today's gender taxonomy, often enough to have it committed to memory. And while gender ideologies insist that they are merely presenting an objective ontology, it is hard to miss that they seem to hope kids will pick a fun, quote, gender creative, unquote, option for themselves. Oh yes, they're just presenting the facts to the children. They're just wanting to make sure that they are informed, right? That's all that they're doing, right? Of course they're not. They are indoctrinating. They are suggesting. And when you suggest this kind of thing to five-year-old kids, guess what is going to happen? They're going to adopt it for themselves. Lindsay Ammer is an educator who identifies as queer, that is, outside the binary of traditional genders. Ammer regularly visits schools to play her ukulele and sing a song Ammer wrote for preschoolers. Think of it as the gender ideologue's answer to free to be you and me. That was Schreier's words there. And here is what her song says, singing this to little elementary school kids. It's okay to be gay. We are different in many ways. Doesn't matter if you're a boy, girl, or somewhere in between. We are all part of one big family. Gay means happy. Singing songs like that to elementary school kids. Oh, is it preschoolers? Oh, I missed that. Preschoolers, thank you. I read right over that. Preschoolers. You know what those preschoolers are going to be singing when they go home? That song. That's what they're going to be singing. That's the kind of stuff that's going to be running through little, what, 3-year-old, 4-year-old heads? In her view, preschool kids must be taught about gender because, quote, this is where children are developing their sense of self. They're observing the world around them, absorbing that information and internalizing it, unquote. What kids require then is a gender vocabulary to enable them to pick out their own point on the spectrum. See, these people are coming after your children. They know that that's where the battle is. You get the children and you get them really young, like in preschool. You've got them, right? You get them in preschool and you get their minds screwed up at that age, you've got them. I'm sad to say, it is sad to say, these kids, that are in these preschools and in those kindergartens that I just read about there, wherever these places are, those kids don't have a chance. Their only chance is Jesus, of course. Their only chance is a miraculous transformation by the grace of God. But otherwise, they don't have a chance. Kids growing up in this world for generations had a chance because people had common sense. They weren't exposed to this kind of stuff. They had a chance to be normal people, right? Are they going to be Bible-believing Christians? Maybe not. But are they going to have a chance to be a normal, productive person? Yeah. I mean, anybody had a chance. These kids have no chance of being a normal person. Being indoctrinated at these ages the whole way through 13 or 15 years of schooling, and then if you can send them to college, maybe, you know, 19 years of schooling or something, they have no chance of being normal people, of being decent people. And I mean that. Except for the radical transformation by the grace of God, that's it. And I'm young enough that I'm going to have to live in a world full of these people, because these kids are going to grow up and they're going to be the people that I'm shopping around, that I'm working with, that I'm dealing with, that are eventually going to be in the city governments, in the state governments, in the national governments. It's going to be these people. This is what we have to look forward to if this doesn't stop. This is what tyrants do, though. They go for the children, and they had this figured out. Stalin had this figured out. Hitler had this figured out. They all have it figured out, right? Go get the children. Get them young. Get them indoctrinated. Mao did this. I mean, they all do it. I quote again from the book. The last tenet of gender ideology that "Who Are You?" presents is a child's feelings are as an infallible indicator of gender. Quote, this is from the book, all right? Read to, was this the one that was read to, I think this was the kindergarten one, right? Yeah, this was the kindergarten one. Here's what they say to kindergartners. "You are who you say you are because you know best," the book coos. "You are who you say you are because you know best." You imagine telling a 5-year-old child that? That if you say you're a girl, then you are, because you know best whether you're a girl or a boy. Or if you say you're a boy, you're a boy. What do your parents know? You know best, right? The book coos. "A hell of a thing." This is what Schreier says. "A hell of a thing, really, telling small children they know best. Parents must listen to their children," the book insists. "But what it really seems to mean is that parents must agree with them." See, the indoctrinating 5-year-old children that they know best. Now, even if gender identity was left out of this, can you imagine if any teacher taught your 5-year-old that he or she knows best? That's crazy. I mean, you think we have problems with child rebellion now? Imagine if from the youngest of ages they are taught in school that they know best. But this is what's happening. This is what they're doing. Let's talk about middle school here. Let me just give you one example of things that are going on in middle schools in this nation. Quote again from Schreier's book. "Positive Prevention Plus is among the most highly respected health curricula in use in schools that employ gender identity instruction. This curriculum, designed for middle school students, instructs teachers to engage students in an, quote, imagining a different gender activity," unquote. Teachers are directed, quote, "ask students to stand up, turn around twice, and sit down again." See, they want to get them dizzy so they can't think straight. That's what I think anyway. Why else would you have them turn around twice and sit down? Man, why don't you do it 10 times so that their brains are so whacked out they'll do whatever you say. Then say, "I want each of you to imagine that you are a different gender," unquote. If the students fail to engage, the teacher should press them, quote, "ask what would be different in your life if you were a different gender," unquote. List student responses on the board, then ask, quote, "How would you feel to be another gender? What things in your life would not change if you are another gender? So this is the kind of experiments that they're trying with children, the kind of activities they're trying with children. These are middle school kids, right? So what, about 11 to 14 years old, somewhere in there, right? Beginning of sixth grade, you're about 11. End of ninth grade, you're 14, I think. 14, whatever. Or no, eighth grade, I mean. Eight and six, 14, yeah. So yeah, 11 to 14 year olds, having them go through this exercise to imagine they're a different gender. This is what you call the power of suggestion. You know, maybe you do have a kid that's a little confused or a little socially awkward or something, and then you say, imagine if you were really a girl, or imagine, little girl, that you're really a boy. And then they start thinking, oh, and before you know it, maybe I am. Now, I have left out intentionally what is being taught in high school because it was even too much for me. You know, if you've listened to me for, you know, the last almost 11 years, that I have covered some very graphic things in sermons, because the Bible does. I could take you to Bible verses right now and read the verse and just give a plain explanation of what the verse is saying and make you blush, make you very uncomfortable with the things that are spoken of in this book, sexual matters, sexually related things. So I have covered all kinds of things in sermons and said all kinds of things that I'm sure a lot of people wish I wouldn't say because it's uncomfortable. But this is too much even for me. I actually started to write out these things. I started to write quotes out from the book, and I just thought, I cannot say these things in a sermon. I just can't. It is too foul. It is too disgusting. It is too graphic. It's too heinous. It's too wicked to even come out of my mouth in a sermon what they are teaching high school students in these classes about gender or sex. I mean, I'm talking like the stuff that you would see in the most graphic, awful porn you could imagine. That's the kind of things that they are talking to high schoolers about. And if you don't believe me, I'll give you my book and give you, and I'll show you where it is and you can read it yourself. You probably wouldn't want to. So I left that part out. But it even gets worse, really, because schools are intentionally hiding children's transgenderism from their parents. So they're teaching them this stuff from, you know, age 5 or age 3, and then, big surprise, after being taught this for years, then the child thinks that he's transgender or she's transgender and comes out, except doesn't tell the parents about it. Just comes out at school. And then the school intentionally hides it from the parents. So you could be a parent in schools this is happening and think, oh, my child's not trans. I got nothing to worry about it. I got nothing to worry about. My child's normal. Except he's using a girl's name in school, or she's using a boy's name in school, and maybe even taking a change of clothes to school and changing while she's or he's there, right? And at school, the name on the rolls, the name on the report, not the report cards that go home, but the name on anything inside the school is the new name. But you don't have any idea that it's happening. This is what's going on. Schools in some states are following NEA recommendations to intentionally not inform parents and actively hide from them that their child has, quote, come out as trans at school. Here's a quote from Irreversible Damage again. The affirmation of trans-identified students is so essential to their welfare and safety, according to educators. She misspoke there. She meant indoctrinators. That it is the policy of the National Education Association and many public schools, including those in California, New York, and New Jersey, that when a trans-identified student, quote, comes out, unquote, at school, the parents not be informed. In cases where the student claims to have unsupportive parents, as we have seen, school administrators and staff even go so far as to conceal the student's newly announced identity from the parents while surreptitiously changing the child's name and pronouns on all school forms. quote, now this, she's quoting the NEA, National Education Association, quote, privacy and confidentiality are critically important for transgender students who do not have supportive families. In those situations, even inadvertent disclosures could put the student in a potentially dangerous situation at home, so it is important to have a plan in place to help avoid any mistakes or slip-ups, according to the NEA. They view the parents as the enemy. The home is a dangerous place. We need to protect these children from their parents, from their homes. Because if their parents and their families find out that they've come out, they could be in danger. We need to protect them. Right? They view you as the enemy. And don't be surprised if teachers and administrators and school board members, even here in our little town, don't in their heart of hearts view you as the enemy if you want to contradict anything they're doing. And I don't say that without precedent. I have been to a school board meeting in person. I have seen what happened there. I have seen people in the school board meeting that went in there, filled out the form, filled out the card to address the school board, which they have the right to do, and were denied to do it. They would not let. You were there too, and so were you. Both of you were. You saw it. I've seen another on video of a school board meeting. I mentioned this before. A grandmother that was very upset about her child being viciously beaten, or her grandchild being viciously beaten in school and nothing being done about it, wanting to address the school board and being told she couldn't. Would not let her, president of the school board and the superintendent of the school. And then she says, I want to know how many lawsuits there are against the school. Superintendent says, I won't tell you that. These people have nothing but disdain for parents and for taxpayers. So don't be surprised if they think of you in the same way that these NEA people think of parents. Quote, the NEA even recommends that schools use a confidential, quote, gender support plan created by the activist group Gender Spectrum. This form explicitly asks, quote, are guardians of this student aware and supportive of their child's gender transition? Yes, no. And, quote, if not, what considerations must be accounted for in implementing this plan? So if the parents aren't supportive, what are we going to have to do to make sure we can transition this kid and they not find out? They're literally conspiring against the parents. Many educators, or indoctrinators, as I should say, think that parental rights do not extend inside the doors of the indoctrination center. And don't be surprised if people here in our little town don't think the same thing. Maybe they'll tell you the right answer if you ask them, and I recommend you ask them. I'm going to mention that in a second. But don't be surprised if in their heart of hearts they think, who are you to tell us how to run our school? Who are you to tell us how to educate your child? That's typically how these people think. We're the experts, you listen to us, we educate your children, and you shut up. Quote, this is from Schreier again. But as fifth grade public school teacher C. Scott Miller explained to me, parents can't always get what they want. Even parents that come in and say, I don't want my kid to be called that, that's nice, but their parental right ended when those children enrolled in public school. He just said like the inside words on the outside, right? He just said the thing you're supposed to keep secret, right? He just said it publicly. Your parental rights ended when you enrolled children in public school. That's what these people think. They are your masters, not your servants. That's what they think. So I ask, do your child's teachers, administrators, and school board members feel the same way? You better find out. And I recommend, seriously, ask them. Ask if your parental rights trump the authority of teachers, administrators, and school board members. Ask them to their face. Ask your child's teacher that. Ask the superintendent and the principals. Ask them that. Who is in ultimate authority of what my child gets taught, me or you? Who's in control here, me or you? I want to know. Ask them who's in charge of your child's education. Ask them who makes the decision of what they get taught and what they don't. Ask them, see what they say. Now, they may lie to you and tell you what you want to hear. That could happen. They may not answer the question, or they may flat out tell you, well, we do. Tough. I don't know, but I would ask. Now, what should parents do? Well, as I mentioned probably a couple of times in this series already, the best thing that parents can do is bring up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Let me take you to Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4. I don't want to leave you without hope at all. I mean, there's all kinds of hope. But you got to be willing to do. You got to be willing to be proactive here. Ephesians 6 and verse 4. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It didn't say ye teachers, ye school administrators, ye NEA heads. Said ye fathers, you're the ones that are responsible for bringing up your children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And nurture means upbringing, training, education. It is a father's responsibility. Now, he can delegate that, but it's ultimately his responsibility. It is not the teachers. It's not the schools. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. That's why I say, you go in there and you tell them who runs the show. You tell them how it's going to be. You tell them, you will not teach my children gender ideology, period. You will not. You're in control, not them. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And if this stuff is not happening in Excelsior yet, and hopefully it's not, you know what? It wouldn't take too many parents that walk in there and tells them in no uncertain terms, you will not do this. And they'll get the point right away. They'll say, oh, we should probably not do this. It wouldn't take very many to do that. It wouldn't take very many parents to go in there in a school board meeting and say, you know what? I don't care if you say I can't speak. I'm going to speak anyway. You will not teach my children gender ideology, period. They get the point. Teach your children the truth from the scriptures, beginning at a very young age. Let's look at Deuteronomy 4 and verse 9. And I hope it's not happening here yet, but I think parents should be proactive to make sure it doesn't happen. Deuteronomy 4 and verse 9. Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligently, lest thou forget these things which thine eyes have seen, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But teach them thy sons and thy sons' sons. He's talking about the scriptures. Teach them diligently. Teach them to your sons and your sons' sons. See, there's a responsibility there to parents and grandparents. I remember when Austin brought that point out. I thought that was so good. Never noticed that. Thy sons' sons. So parents and grandparents ought to be teaching their children the scriptures. That's the antidote to this stuff. Deuteronomy 6, 6 through 7. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart, and thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children, and shalt talk of them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest by the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up. And thou shalt bind them for a sign upon thine hand, and they shall be as frontlets between thine eyes, and thou shalt write them on the posts of thy house and on thy gates. So I've got scriptures on the walls of my house. It's a good idea. It's a good reminder. But what you have to do is you get used to anything you get used to. So what you have to do is intentionally stop and actually look at it once in a while and read it, because otherwise it's just like anything else on the wall and you don't even notice it anymore. But teach them. Teach them to your children. When you sit in your house, So at the dinner table, when you walkest by the way, when you go for a walk or you go for a drive, when you lie down, when you say your prayers with them, when you lay them in bed, read them a chapter of the Bible or something. When you rise up, when you get up in the morning, before you even send them off to school, read them a little scripture, right? That's what God's telling you here. At all times, morning, evening, meal times, incorporate the scriptures into your children's lives. Then spend time with them. Talk with them. Make sure that they're comfortable telling you or asking you anything. That's really important. Because if your children think that topics like this are taboo and they can't bring it up and they would never talk to you because it's embarrassing or it feels weird or something, then guess what? They're not going to talk to you about it. Right? They'll talk to somebody else about it. And more than likely, whoever else they talk about it is not going to be a good influence. So make sure they know that you can talk, they can talk with you about anything. Sex, gender, all those kind of things. I know that there are plenty of parents that are like ostriches with their heads stuck in the sand and just think, I can't talk to my children about this. I can't talk to them about sex. And if I don't, then it'll be okay because they'll never hear about it. Yeah, right. They're going to hear about it from their friends and, they're going to learn all the wrong things. You need to talk to them about it first when they're young, age appropriately, obviously. But and then protect your children. Keep them away from ungodly influences such as television, movies, the internet, social media, smartphones, and friends who do not share their Christian values. Remember, Paul said, "Be not deceived. Evil communication corrupts good manners." 1 Corinthians 15:33. You want to shield them and protect them from these things, because if not, they will be affected by them, as I've already mentioned in this series. Turn with me to Psalm 101, verses 3 through 4. And if you are going to allow your children to watch movies, if I were you, and I have friends that do this, it's going to take you twice as long, but I recommend you watch the movie first without them. Even if it's something that you think is totally harmless, pretty much nothing today is totally harmless, you watch that movie first without them, and then you'll know if you think it's worthy for them to watch, then you'll know if you have to fast forward through a part, or maybe you just decide, you know what, nope, too much junk in here, I'm not going to let them watch it at all. But the last thing you want to do is sit down as a family, pop in a movie, and this is the first time everybody has seen it, and then, whoa, didn't know that was there. You don't want to go there. Psalm 101, 3 through 4. David said, "I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes." I have TV written next to that verse. Had that there for a long time. "I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. A froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person." See, David hated evil, and he said, "It's not going to cleave to me." And the way to get it to not cleave to you is not to set it before your eyes, not to indulge in it. Because the more you see it, the more it'll cleave to you. The more time you spend with wicked people, the more they rub off on you. David says, "He's going to depart from me. I'm not going to know a wicked person. I'm not going to have wicked people hanging around me. I don't need friends like that." And like I said, I think it was last Sunday, you need to do that for your children because they don't have enough sense to make that decision themselves. Be hyper-vigilant to know what your children are being taught in school and who their friends are. I think today it would probably make sense if your children have friends, say, and they want to go out to do something with those friends, say, have your friend come over to the house. Have him come over to the house. I want to meet him. I want to get to know him before you go anywhere with this friend. Of course, if your child's dating somebody, that would be a given, I would think, especially if it's a daughter, or a son for that matter. You want to go on a date, have them come over here, let me meet them first, and then you can go ahead. And maybe, especially if they want to spend the night at a friend's house, say, let's invite that friend and his parents over for dinner. Let's all get together, two families. I want to know who these people are. I want to know a little bit about them before I send you over to their house. And if they say, no, we don't want to do that, well, that should be probably all you need to know. Nope, you're not going there. just my recommendation. I don't know. Seems reasonable to me. Ask your children's teachers, administrators, and school board members if your children are being taught gender ideology in school, and make them answer you. Don't do like these media personalities when they interview politicians and ask them a hard question and then let them skirt the question and then get on to the next thing. Make them answer you directly. Are my children being taught gender ideology in any fashion whatsoever? Is gender even mentioned ever in school? Do you ever mention the topic of gender at all? Yes or no? Make them answer you. Make the school board members answer you. Is this being taught in this school? Yes or no? You will answer my question. And if you don't, next time I'm coming back with a video camera. And then I'm going to post it all over social media that you will not answer this question. You will answer my question. Now, be nice first. You walk in there, you be really nice until they don't answer the question, and then you get mean. Ask the administrators, ask the superintendent, the principals. Are my children being taught gender ideology in this school? In any way, make them answer you. And then you tell them. You ask first and then you tell them. You tell their teachers, administrators, and school board members that in no uncertain terms that you will not tolerate any teaching of or even mentioning of transgenderism to your children. You tell them. They are your servants. Don't ever get that confused. Those people are your servants. You pay their salary. They do what you tell them to do. And you say, well, what if they won't do it? I got a really easy solution for you. Take them out. Withdraw your child from any school which is pushing the transgender agenda. If they won't answer your questions as to whether transgenderism is being taught or promoted or even talked about in the school, if they won't answer that question, you know what the answer is, right? The answer is yes. If you say, is gender identity being taught in this school? And they say, well, we're only going to talk about that. The answer is yes. If they don't unequivocally say no, you know what you do? Pull them out. That's what I think. You do what you want. Ephesians 5 and verse 11. Ephesians 5 and verse 11. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. For it's a shame to even speak of those things which are done to them in secret. That's why I say I wouldn't even want it being spoken of in school. Unless it was spoken of in a completely negative light, saying that transgenderism is evil. Other than that, I don't even want it spoken of. It's a shame to even speak of those things which are done of people in evil. Speak of evil that are done to them in secret. Same thing we go for sodomy, you know, teaching them about sodomy and wickedness like that. All right, now for the remainder of the sermon, I want to go through a glossary of gender ideology terms to get you up to snuff on all of this insanity. So when you hear these words, most of which have been made up in the last several years, I think, or at least I had never heard of them until the last several years. But you'll know what they're talking about. This list comes from an article called Glossary of Must-Know Gender Identity Terms, published by VeryWellMind.com. I've got the URL there for you if you want to check it out. These are examples of what the Bible would call vain babblings. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 12. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 12. 20. Did I say 12? 1 Timothy 6, 20. O Timothy, keep that which is committed to thy trust, avoiding profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science falsely so called. These are vain babblings. 2 Timothy 2 and verse 16 says, but shun profane and vain babblings, for they will increase unto more ungodliness. So these terms here, I'm just reading them to you because they are out there, and you're going to hear this stuff. You'll see it. If you already haven't, you will. And I want you to be aware of what they're talking about. First one is agender. That's one word, agender. A negates, you know, whatever comes after it. It is referring to a person who does not identify with any gender identities. Most people who use agender don't feel that they have agender at all. Now, I've done a little bit of research, and there is a strong correlation between identifying as agender and having undergone a lobotomy. It's almost a one-to-one correlation there. Kind of strange, I know. But yeah, it doesn't identify as having a gender at all. Androgynous, referring to a person with a gender identity or a presentation that is neutral or has both masculine and feminine parts. Synonyms include null gender, androgyne, genderless, or neutrosis. Or another synonym could be somebody that has psychosis. Bigender is referring to a person who identifies with two different genders at the same time. The Bible calls this being a double-minded man, unstable in all your ways. Cisgender or cisnormativity. These terms, just absurd. A person whose gender identity or subconscious sex aligns with the sex that they were assigned at birth. You see, there it is, a person, they, right? You'd expect it from lunatics like this, though. For example, a person assigned the sex of male at birth who identifies as male gender would be considered cisgender. Similarly, a person assigned the sex of female at birth who identifies as female gender would be cisgender. Most people are cisgender, and so this is considered the quote norm unquote, which can lead to systemic and unintentional prejudice against trans people in society. However, cisgender individuals can also be gender nonconforming. The Latin prefix cis means on the same side. Just remember, cisgender means normal. Just remember that. A crossdresser. Crossdresser is a person who wears clothing that is not typical for their gender. Usually the term is used for men who prefer to dress in women's clothing. This may be done for self-expression or other reasons. Synonyms include transvestite. That's an old one. I haven't heard that for a while. Or drag queen. Being a cross-dresser does not automatically equate or equal being transgender. Some people may just do this to express themselves. Yes, there are many weirdos out there. We had a transvestite. Well, I don't know. We called her one. I don't know if she actually was. We called her a transvestite in the town that I grew up in. Also called her the spandex queen. She always wore spandex, and she did look a little strange. She might have actually been a woman. I don't know. It's hard to tell, But, I mean, we're talking 30 years ago. That was a long time ago before all this stuff started in earnest. All right, dead name. This is an interesting one. Dead name. Name assigned at birth that the individual does not identify with. Dead names reflect the idea that the name is no longer how the person identifies, hence the word dead. Being dead named can cause trans people to experience dysphoria. It's the only dead heads or talk about dead names. But yeah, so if Tommy wants to be called Susie and you call him Tommy, you have dead named him, and you're going to cause him a lot of psychological stress by calling him his actual name. I'm a dead namer, I'll tell you, I'll admit that. I will not call anybody by some new name. Or put it this way. I won't call anybody by some new name that's the opposite of their gender. I'll put it that way. You want to go by a new name, that's fine if it's of the same gender. But I will not call anybody a name of the opposite gender. Hopefully I don't get the crap beat out of me someday for it. Demigender, demi-boy, or demi-girl. The prefix demi indicates a person who has the experience of partially identifying with a particular gender and includes those who may be non-binary. Other related terms include demi-enby and demi-trans. NB is non-binary. It's so stupid. I mean, you got, keeping this stuff straight. NB, E-N-B-Y, is spelling out the two word, the two letters NB, which means non-binary. So if you're non-binary, you're an NB. Right? So if you see somebody called an NB, an E-N-B-Y, that means he or she is non-binary. This stuff, it gets more and more confusing the more you get into it. Not that you really have to know all this stuff. It's just nice to kind of be aware when you see some of this stuff, you at least sort of know what they're talking about. Femme or femmy, I'm not sure, it's F-E-M-M-E, referring to a person with a gender identity or expression that leans toward being feminine in general. A person who is femme or femmy, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. The thing is, you can't look these words up in a dictionary because they just made them up, right? So to look them up to try to figure out how to pronounce them probably won't work. Anyway, a person who is femme does not necessarily identify as a woman and is not necessarily assigned the female sex at birth by a doctor. The Bible would call this effeminate. Gender apathetic, referring to a person who does not care about their gender nor how they appear to others in terms of their gender. In other words, they do not identify with any particular gender. Another term for this is an imbecile. All right, gender binary. A binary division of gender into only two types, man or woman, which is expected to match the sex assigned at birth, male, female, or intersex. This system does not allow for people who identify with a gender that does not fit the binary system, or people who feel their gender is fluid rather than fixed. Fluid, it just changes all the time. Gender conforming, referring to a person who follows the rules of society about how genders should act, behave, and appear to others. In other words, a person who has common sense. Gender dysphoria, a medical diagnosis and term to reflect the distress experienced by individuals who have a misalignment between their sex assigned at birth and the gender that they identify with internally. This means that a person doesn't feel right about their body parts, physical characteristics, or societal interactions in terms of their internal experience of gender. Now, like I mentioned a while back, I know I'm being sarcastic sometimes, and I'm not disparaging the poor people, especially the poor teenagers that got sucked up into this thing. I'm not making fun of them. I'm making fun of this foolish taxonomy and nomenclature of this ridiculous, insane, and wicked movement. That's what I'm making fun of. I'm making fun of the stupid people that are promoting this. All right, gender expansive, referring to people who work to make culture more inclusive in terms of gender expression, gender roles, and gender norms in society. These people go by another name. People that work to make culture more inclusive of gender stuff, they go by another term. It's called agents of Satan. Gender fluid. Gender fluid is referring to a person who shifts between genders or who feels as though their gender changes over time, either rapidly or gradually. These people are also referred to as mentally ill. Can you imagine a person that is gender fluid and you're supposed to use the right pronouns, and but his gender can change rapidly? So you say, "Oh, I'm sorry, sir. Sir, I'm a ma'am. Oh, I'm sorry, ma'am. Ma'am, I'm a sir." I mean, can you imagine trying to talk to a guy like that? Gender identity, a core sense of the self as being a woman, man, or neither. This does not always align with the sex assigned at birth and can develop and change over time. It also cannot be assumed based on outward physical characteristics. You just can't assume somebody's gender by taking a look at them. Nope. Nope, that penis doesn't mean anything. Could be a girl. You just never know. Gender-inclusive pronouns. Pronouns that are neutral and can be used by both transgender and cisgender people. For example, the words they, them, and theirs, when used to refer to a single person, are gender-neutral pronouns. As I've said, using they, them, or their is a sure indicator of mental retardation if you are talking about an individual. Genderqueer. Referring to a person who does not align with the gender binary of man versus woman. Gender questioning. Referring to a person who is questioning aspects of their gender, such as their gender identity or gender expression. Gray gender. Referring to a person who does not experience a strong pull toward any particular gender identity or expression. Just doesn't really have a strong pull. He's just kind of wishy-washy. Doesn't really know. Now, I would be what you call black gender or white gender or something, right? I am absolutely certain of my gender. I spent a long time a while back looking at myself in the mirror naked, and I determined after that I am certain I'm a man. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. That's all it took, was just to take a gander in the mirror for a while. Absolutely certain. Intergender. Referring to a person who does not experience one gender, but rather falls between male and female gender identities. Intersex. Now, this is actually a real thing. Most of the rest of this stuff is just made-up BS, but this is actually a real thing, and this is a very sad thing that does happen to an extremely low amount of people. Right? This does not happen very often. Intersex is a person with characteristics that are not easily categorized as male or female. For example, reproductive organs, chromosomes, hormones. For example, a man could be born with ovaries instead of testes, or a woman could be born with XY chromosomes. Intersex occurs at a rate of about 1 in 1,500 births, but most people are assigned either male or female sex at birth, regardless of being intersex. Intersex people may identify with their assigned sex, identify with the opposite sex, or identify as intersex. They do not usually identify as trans, transgender, or transsexual. I'm honestly surprised to hear that it's even as high as 1 in 1,500, because that's, I mean, if you think about it, there are 10,000 people in Excelsior Springs. So with that statistic, I mean, that would be almost 10 people in Excelsior Springs that were born as intersex, which, I mean, I've never met somebody like this as far as I know. So that's kind of surprising. That seems like a lot, but maybe not. Okay, now all the LGBT stuff. There's a bunch of these. LGBTTTIQ. And no, I didn't just make that up to be funny. LGBTTTIQ. An acronym representing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, transgender, two-spirit, intersex, and queer. We'll learn about what some of those things are here in a minute if we haven't covered them already. LGBT, an acronym representing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. That's the umbrella term where all the freaks are, you know, placed under. LGBTQIA+, an acronym representing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning, intersex, asexual, or ally, etc. So even if you are just supportive of this foolishness, you could be technically in the camp of the LGBTQIA+, because you are an ally. LGBTQ+, an acronym representing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning, etc. This acronym is internationally recognized. If there's one thing that the United States still exports in large quantities, it is filth and perversion. It is an international phenomenon and probably being led the way by none other than good old America. LGBTQ2, an acronym representing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning, and two-spirit. We'll get into what a two-spirit person is in a minute. But don't ever call yourself a two-spirit, because that is cultural appropriation. But we'll get into that in a second. LGBTQI, an acronym representing lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex. And then you have a maverick, or maverick, I'm not sure how you pronounce that. Maverick, it looks like. A person who experiences their gender identity to be separate from current categories and descriptions. So if the 157 genders out there, if you don't identify with any of them, you're a maverick. But don't worry, they'll come up with one that you can probably identify with here soon. Misgender. This is a very bad one. You don't want to ever do this. Calling someone by the wrong pronoun or using language that is not inclusive to their gender identity. It's misgendering. So if you call some man who thinks he's a woman, if you call him sir, you've misgendered him. Or if you call him or his, you reference him by his, you've misgendered him. Multigender, people who identify with more than one gender. This includes people who identify as bigender, trigender, pangender, polygender, and in some cases, gender fluid. You could just identify with one or more. And then how do you exactly, I mean, how do you misgender a guy? I guess you can't misgender a guy that identifies with all of them. I'm not sure how you're supposed to refer to him at all. I think this is pronounced neutral. I did look it up. It's French. Like I said, I think it's a made-up word, but it's made up of part of a French word. People who have a gender that is neither male nor female. This includes non-binary, genderless, gender fluid, and agender identities. Non-binary, sometimes called NB or NB, that is ENBY or the letters NB, is an umbrella term for anyone who falls outside the gender binary of male or female. Some people simply identify as non-binary, and some identify as a specific type of non-binary identity. Examples include gender queer, gender fluid, agender, bigender, etc. And then we have novigender, a gender identity used to describe the experience of people who don't feel that their gender can be described using existing categories due to its complexity. Yes, your gender is so complex, words cannot describe. These people, seriously, you're talking about the mentally ill here. And we're talking severely mentally ill people here. It's, in a way, it's funny, and in a way, it's very, very sad. And then you have omnigender, a person who identifies with all gender identities. Pangender, a gender identity that involves experiencing many different gender identities simultaneously. This is what you call a schizophrenic. And then you have polygender or pangender, the experience of displaying different parts from multiple gender identities. Queer was previously used as a derogatory term. I still like to use it that way myself. For transgender and transsexual individuals, which has since been reclaimed by the community to display their identities with pride. It is kind of irritating now that they've taken one of, a good term like queer, a good pejorative, and turned it around to mean a good thing. Maybe someday they'll start calling themselves sodomites. I doubt it. I wish they would, though. That'd be great. Questioning. People who are in the process of questioning their gender identity and wish to explore different options. Sex. A classification system assigned at birth based on a person's physical characteristics, reproductive systems, chromosomes, hormones, and secondary sex characteristics. Sex is generally classified as at birth as male, female, or intersex based on the appearance of the external genitalia. If these are ambiguous, sex is assigned based on internal genitalia, hormones, and chromosomes. Sex is generally recorded on the birth certificate, but can sometimes be changed on this document as well as on other legal documents, such as a driver's license. I don't know if you've noticed this, but I've noticed that almost everywhere where you go now to sign up for anything and they ask for sex, male, female, or other, or don't want to say, or something. I don't know if you notice this. I don't think I see a single form anymore that doesn't have that. Male, female, other, or you know, don't say, or something. It's crazy. It's totally infiltrated the culture. Social dysphoria, a type of gender dysphoria that arises from distress about how other people label, interact, or perceive an individual. It can also be a result of one's own behavior that is at odds with their gender identity. Third gender. The term third gender comes from Native and non-Western cultures. It refers to a gender category that does not divide simply into male or female. Then you have this one. This is probably the most confusing term of all, and I've already mentioned this before, the term trans man or trans woman. If you want an easy way to remember it is, it's just the opposite of what you'd think. So just remember, it's the opposite of what you think. A trans man is someone who was assigned the sex of female at birth, so in other words, a woman, right, who identifies as a man. Also known as female to male, or FTM. A trans woman is someone who was assigned the sex of male at birth, but who identifies as a woman, also known as male to female, or MTF. So remember, a trans man is a woman, and a trans woman is a man. Okay, so that's what you got to remember. Trans feminine, having a feminine gender identity but being assigned a different sex at birth. Transgender or trans. Transgender is an umbrella term for anyone who identifies as a gender other than the one they were assigned at birth. This includes trans men or women and non-binary identities such as gender fluid, gender queer, and agender. Transitioning means activities engaged in by trans individuals to affirm their gender identity, such as changing their name, clothing, pronouns, sex designation, etc. This can include medical treatments such as hormone therapy, sex reassignment surgery, etc. This process is different for every person, and the time it takes and activities that are engaged in are not universal. Transmasculine is having a masculine gender identity but being assigned a different sex at birth. Transpositive is the term. This term refers to the opposite of transphobia. This type of attitude is validating and accepting of transsexual and transgender individuals and celebrates their rights. I better not ever find out that anybody in this church is transpositive, or we're going to have major problems. Transsexual. We're almost done here. Transsexual is a person whose gender identity is different from the sex that they were assigned at birth. Transsexual generally means the individual has had gender-affirming surgeries and has fully gone through with their transition. That is, while they're still alive, sadly. Transphobia. Intolerance, fear, aversion, prejudice, harassment, discrimination, violence, or hatred aimed at trans individuals and trans communities based on stereotypes and misconceptions. And then trigender is the experience of having three gender identities at the same time. They didn't add quad gender and quint gender and sex gender and sept gender and oct gender and... But they will, I'm sure. And then Two-Spirit, finally. Two-Spirit is an important term in many indigenous cultures. It has no set definition, but is mainly used to describe a spiritual view of gender or sexuality. It can also be used It can be used to describe sexual orientation, gender identity, or spiritual identity. It is a term specific to indigenous cultures, and using it as a non-indigenous person would be cultural appropriation. So don't ever want to do that. If you're not an Indian, basically, you don't refer to yourself as Two-Spirit, because then you're acting like an Indian, and that is cultural appropriation, and that's a very, very bad thing. So don't ever want to do that. All right, next time we will pick it up and conclude this series, finally, talking about DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, and ESG. And I'll be glad to be finished with this and moving on to something more biblical, thankfully.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.